Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod, along with our favorite bracketologist, Dom Leese of Bracketometry.com. Dom received his BS in bracketology from Texas State. Well, I probably shouldn't say that because there's probably some little kid listening like, oh my God, I can grow up and become a bracketologist. He resides in Lone Star State where he pours over net metrics and KenPom. So thanks so much for coming back on the show, Dom.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Despite my middling performance this year compared to previous years.
Well, and that's why they aggregate over 5 years. We'll talk about that in just a second because, we wanted to have you come back on to go over the brackets like we did last year, figure out what the heck, you know, the selection committee did this year. I apologize as I'm fighting through a cold that I probably picked up on the Minneapolis light rail along with all the drug users and vagrants. anyway, that just shows you the dedication we have towards you. Listener.
I love it. I appreciate it. Can't even tell either, though.
And all the supporters of the number one Michigan State basketball podcast, Tiff Nuts. So which reminds me, if you haven't yet, head on over to thefinalfoursontheschedule.com/contests. You can sign up for free for a bracket challenge. Prizes are piles of Nudge gift cards, which gets you super comfortable Spartan or other apparel, like Texas State, if Dom wins. Can check out all the other great products at nudgeprinting.com. Tons of stuff there. Won't regret it. My daughter actually filled up brackets last night, and she has the most beautiful brackets I've ever seen because she used her calligraphy pen. And then she had no idea what she just like. Well, I know I don't pick 16s, but she picked whatever name looked the prettiest with her calligraphy, and that's the name that she picked advancing on. Except on the right side of the bracket because they had to be shorter because they tend to smudge, and so she used shorter names there. So, which you know, according to Rod, that's just as accurate as any other sort of way you can pick the teams this year.
I think so.
While I was waiting for us to start this, I submitted my bracket. And spoiler alert, unlike the clowns on the CBS selection show on Sunday, I don't have a single one seed in my Final Four. So I'm actually going out on a limb and putting my money where my mouth is that we're going to see some sort of rerun of last year due to parity. I don't have it quite as extreme as last year in terms of the seeds getting through. But unfortunately, Rick Barnes, I'm putting the hex on you. I've got Tennessee winning this. So.
Oh, no. He finally pulls it off.
We'll see.
All right. So let's start out here quick. So, Dom, this is an unprecedented last few days of conference tournaments. We had five, I think, bed thieves in conference tournaments, which is more than I think the last 2 or 3 years combined. And then the criteria used for weighting by the committee seemed confusing to us. We tried to figure it out. We couldn't quite come to an answer. And so tell us how you did it. You mentioned middling, so you're kind of the middle of the pack. You're just, I think, exactly average. Exactly average. Try and give us an idea for what the committee process was, your overall impression for how they did. Because I know, you know, people talk about, you know, who's the most accurate, et cetera. I think we're not recognizing that the players change, and by players I mean the committee members, change every year. So what, how they weight things, how they sort of view it is different every year. And despite all the, you know, criteria they can use, what they use to weight a little bit more this year versus the previous year, you're sort of guessing or basing almost like working from last year on what they used versus, you know, this year could be different, right? And so you're...
Yeah, exactly.
You could be... Yeah. So kind of go over what you think happened this year with the committee and how you may adjust how you're looking at things, unless it's like a trade secret. You don't want to give it away.
No, for sure. I mean, main thing was really that shifted everything down and messed everything up was just how disrespected seed-wise all the Mountain West teams were. They were all several seed lines off where they were expected. And then that, of course, moved all the other teams around as well, which just totally shook everything up. And I think really what happened there is that obviously there's always been the talk about how the BPI, which is one of the metrics they look at, just seems to have a huge Mountain West bias against it. Now, in past years, I think the committee has kind of realized that, hey, that's a bit of an outlier, so let's not punish them because this one metric doesn't like this one conference. But this year on the team sheets, there was one less metric. They used to use Sagarin as well, who for some reason this year didn't do college basketball analytics like he did in the past. And I think with that one less metric on the team sheet, now the committee wasn't able really to look at the BPI as an outlier as they did in the past, because now there's only two predictive metrics instead of three. And I guess in hindsight, I should have realized, well, how are they going to view it as an outlier when it's one of two? You can't really do it at that point.
Can I stop you there for a second? You're saying that there's a perceived bias against the Mountain West in the BPI.
Yes.
What specifically are we talking about there in terms of how those teams or that conference is devalued?
Just, I mean, if you look at any other, I mean, not even the ones on the team sheet, you just look at where all the Mountain West teams are in the BPI, which is a predictive metric, one of the ones that's supposed to say how good you are, not like what you've done on your resume. And every single Mountain West team is lower in BPI than they are in every single other predictive metric by a pretty consistent amount. So people have speculated that, like, it's not giving teams as much credit when you win an elevation because they have a bigger home court advantage because of that, which, in my opinion, is a little bit of BS. But, I mean, they don't release the formula, and that's the best guess we can make. But clearly, there's something in the BPI that's bringing that conference down. And in the past, like I said, the committee's kind of viewed that as an outlier. But with one less metric on the team sheet this year, I think they kind of trusted the BPI a little bit more in that regard than they maybe should have or have in the past.
Now, I've seen suggestions in the aftermath of all this that one thing that ought to be done is to add at least a couple more metrics into the equation. So, like, Torvik is not on their team sheet. Is that correct?
No, and I would be Torvik. They could add Evan Maya, Aslametrics. Any of those would be great additions. And I mean, this year on the team sheet, there were two resume metrics and two predictive metrics. And like I said, it's hard to really find outliers when there's just two of each. You're kind of just averaging them and going with it. If there was three of each, and like say a team and two of the predictive metrics was like in the 40s and another was in the 70s, you could say, okay, they're probably actually closer to the 40s. Now, if there's just 140 and 170, you don't know which one's an outlier. So you're kind of plotting them at 55 in that regard.
Right. You're averaging. So, okay, that explains the Mountain West. Certainly one of the big questions that was coming out of Selection Sunday is why all those teams seem to be so much lower than people had speculated they would be.
Yeah.
And there were six of them. I mean, as I understood it, it became pretty clear that if New Mexico had not won the tournament, they were going to be out.
Yeah, and that stunned me. I would have missed that in my bracket. If they lost to San Diego State, I would have had them in without a shadow of a doubt.
Right. But let's turn to some of the other questions that I think a lot of people have had. And we're recording this at halftime of to call it a rock fight is insulting rock fights of a first four game between Colorado State and Virginia, in which Virginia has a whopping 14 points on the board at halftime.
Yeah.
And that's only one less than their shooting percentage in the first half of 15%. This was one that it seemed to me, and I took a look, I looked at your brackets before the announcement. You kept us waiting. I was getting very nervous to see where you had Michigan State. We'll get to Michigan State, of course, in a bit. But
Usually I have my bracket out Sunday morning, and then change one thing or two. I changed my mind on with how hectic that Saturday was. I didn't even have it one done until right before the show. It was part of the reason I did a little less that, because usually in years past I'm done with it, and then I can make some last second changes that I feel good about. This year I was just done and submitted it just in time. And then, like, I was thinking, oh man, in hindsight, if I had more time after making all those adjustments from yesterday, I might have changed that and got it right. So, chaos of Saturday certainly affected me. I should have been all nighter. Sleeping cost me.
But I looked at yours and several others that are in that top 10 to 15 range over the last 5 years average on Bracket Matrix. And it seemed pretty much universal that Virginia was going to be out. And it seemed as if Oklahoma. Did you have Oklahoma in your field?
I did have Oklahoma in, and really, I don't hate them being out. Just what I thought is, usually in the past, the committee rewards a clean resume. They might not seed you well, but if you don't have a single bad loss on the entire season,
right.
Even if you only have a couple good wins, I mean, you still have a couple good wins and no bad losses, they'll put you in. So, and they would have been in if there weren't a ton of bid thieves, but it's kind of stunning that they were one of five teams in the country with no losses outside of Q1, even though they didn't do great in Q1, and yet they still missed the tournament.
Yeah, that is stunning. And I think the fact that Virginia got in over Oklahoma really caught almost everybody by surprise. That seems to be pretty much universally the one that people missed. So you mentioned the reason that it was surprising that Oklahoma maybe didn't get the nod, despite, you know, not having an overwhelming resume. What do you think the reasoning was that Virginia got in? Because I have to tell you, I've looked at it and I can't find it. And it's, of course, being that skepticism is being supported by what's going on right now as we're recording this. But I'm curious what your thoughts are. What do you think it was that got Virginia in the door? Because I can't find the thread.
As I've always said in the past, when you look at the metrics, the predictives that say how good you are, but the result-based ones that say, like, who you've beaten, who you've lost, Virginia's result-based metrics were actually not bad. It was an average of 35, and their predictive metrics say they're like a team in the 60s, so big gap there. But I think they just kind of trusted those result-based metrics that said, hey, this team has done enough on the resume to get in. They did have a couple of nice wins. They won at Clemson, who was a six seed. They had a neutral win out of conference over Florida, and it seems like they really emphasized neutral victories. So in a way, as crazy as it sounds, out of conference victories, but yeah, victories away from home as well. In a way, I don't hate Virginia being in. I really left them out because I thought the committee, even though they say they don't use it, eye test would just seep in just a little bit. And it would leave them out for the sole reason of, clearly this is not a great basketball team by any stretch, but they've certainly overachieved given how good they actually are with some of the results they got. And I think the committee rewarded them for that. So I missed that one, but personally...
Yeah, but you weren't alone.
It was the consensus,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The consensus was they were out. So, okay. So that gives us at least some insight into what you think the reasoning was. There was one other thing about them I wanted to ask you about, and then I'll turn it back to Eric. And this is not unusual. When they trot out the committee chair and they interview them and they ask them about specific teams, and usually you're getting some version of doublespeak anyway.
But I thought this
year was really egregious. So one of the things that I noted was in certain situations, including, I think, a team close to our hearts here, strength of schedule, who you played, was trotted out as part of a justification for getting some teams in. And then conversely, with the Iowa State situation, where most people thought they had a real shot at that one seed, and not only do they not get the one, they're the lowest seeded two.
Yeah.
And the reason given was they didn't play anybody in the non-conference. But I look at Virginia, and so I start to think at that point, okay, maybe they leaned on strength of schedule a little heavier than they have in other versions of this. And then I look at Virginia, and Virginia did, if I'm remembering correctly, did not have a particularly impressive strength of schedule. That was what was maddening to me about this, is I looked at it several different ways, and every time I thought I found a consistent through line, there would be a contradictory example that would pop up.
I think if anything, they might have, if your overall strength of schedule out of conference was bad, but you played one good team and you beat that good team, it's almost like they gave you a pass. It's like,
so
like
Florida was game. That. Florida exactly. was that for them.
Their All entire right. out of conference schedule was terrible, but they played one very good team in Florida and beat them. So they're almost like, well, that makes up for the rest of it being bad. They beat someone good. That, and I don't know, maybe if they're overweighting one good win out of conference and then also overweighting just that number of what that non-conference strength of schedule is, but that seemed to be kind of what they didn't explain it very well, but I think that's what he was trying to say in that regard, kind of how they did it. Yeah. But the explanations, you're right. It was a lot of, it sounded even more contradictory than I think it was.
Well, I guess, you know, the question our listeners have obviously is Michigan State going into the selection show, you know, with all the upsets, there's definitely a lot of unsettling, unrest within the Spartan Nation where, you know, what would happen? Would Michigan State, if they were, because most people had assumed they were a 10 or an 11. 11, obviously, you'd be a play-in. In this case, you would have 11, you're out, right? I mean,
if you were 11, you'd be out this year.
So if you're 10, you're playing Dayton, most likely. And then, you know, it's not announced. The last bracket, you know, it was anxiety inducing, I guess to say the least. But they end up being the highest 90. They were nowhere near the cut line. So I guess go into that because that seemed to surprise most people. At least I felt like, you know, certainly within our fan base, because, you know, partly we've seen Michigan State play. We know what they are and what they're not. And this is part of the problem with knowing a team intimately. You've seen all the warts, you know, every single one of them, and you assume every team in the bubble must have something good going for them when they probably are just as warty as your team.
No. And I think really it's, I mean, again, to sharp it on those predictive metrics that aren't really used for selection, but are used for seeding. I think they more even heavily leaned into those this year because Michigan State is iffy as their resume looked at places with wins and losses, and KenPom and BPI both have them at 18. I mean, which is crazy high. So I think they figured, all right, well, this team was just good enough to be one of the ones in the field. But now that they're in, since the predictive metrics say they're so good, we got to bump them up at least one seed to a 9. I personally didn't have them in a play-in, but I still had them as a 10. I thought those predictive metrics would be enough just to bump them out of the play-in, but it doubly so not only bumped them out of the play-in, but out of the 10 line altogether. So that's why I had them out of the play-in, is because of those predictives, but I didn't think it would completely jump them up a whole seed line, let alone out of the play-in. So they just even heavier leaned on those for the seeding this year than they have in the past.
Should we just go into the prediction, or do you have a few more questions, Rod?
Yeah, maybe a couple more. So
okay, go for it.
I guess I'm curious, you mentioned the Mountain West, and obviously that was the most egregious example of underseeding. I want to just briefly touch on another conference that did a lot of complaining after the field was announced, and that's the Big East. I have seen a theory posited, and it intuitively makes some sense to me. I'm wondering how you feel about it. That, you know, obviously for readers or for listeners who may not be fully aware of what we're talking about here, just to recap, the Big East had three teams, St. John's, Seton Hall, Providence, all of whom felt as if they deserved a bid, and they didn't get it. And I think Providence was nowhere near it in the end. Or the other
neither were St. John's.
Neither was St. John's. So only Seton Hall was in that first four out. Do you think the theory I've seen, and it intuitively, as I say, makes some sense to me, is at the bottom of the Big East, people talked about how strong the league was for most of the year. And I think it end up the number two or number three league, I think.
Number two.
So, but what got lost in that is I think a big part of the reason for that ranking was the very top.
Exactly.
Of the conference.
Exactly.
The Big East had two teams in Georgetown and DePaul who were absolutely abysmal. I mean, they made Michigan look good as to how bad those teams were. Do you think that was a major factor? just how bad the bottom end of the Big East was in maybe dragging those teams' resumes down just enough that they didn't make it, or were there other things at work?
I think that's partially it, and I think also partially that the fact is that it was so top-heavy and so evenly balanced in the middle. I mean, you say it's the number two conference, but really that's all on the shoulders of those top three teams for the most part. If you take them out, they're not rating nearly as good with just the teams that are saying they should have been in. So, yeah, I didn't actually have a huge gripe with those teams being out. Again, just because they all almost had the same resume. It's like, all right, you have three really good teams, and then you kind of have this whole jumble in the middle. And it's like, all right, should we just randomly choose one of you because your top teams are good? Or do we leave you out because none of your resumes stand out from each other outside of the top three? So, and same, right. Seton Hall, I guess, would have been that one. If there were a couple less speed thieves, they still would have been in. So it's not even like they were disrespected. I think if there's two less bid thieves and Seton Hall gets in that play-in, Big East isn't complaining at all. So again, that's just more on they should complain to the teams that stole bids than the committee on that one. I like the Big East. I'm a fan of the Big East. I would have liked to see more teams in. I just don't think any of the teams in that middle had the resume to do it.
Right. And then anybody, you know, we've talked about some of the teams. Obviously, we mentioned about the underseeding of the Mountain West. Any other examples of a team or maybe a couple of teams that you felt in particular either got surprisingly rewarded or were unjustly dinged by the committee in terms of where they got seated?
See, now, one interesting one, and again, this is partially just due to some outside factors, but BYU was shifted down to a sixth just because they couldn't play on Sundays.
Sunday
and,
thing.
And now, when it was all said and done, I didn't think it was that bad because they got a 6, but they also then got an 11 that a lot of people thought should have been a 12, so it kind of evened out for them. But now, in hindsight, with today's news about Kansas, not playing in the tournament, what's even crazier is that had that been announced before and Bill Self was actually honest instead of saying that we're going to be fully healthy for the tournament, which they weren't, then I think BYU, who was that top five, would have actually been the bottom four. And then at that point, you're a protected seed. You're not going to get bumped out of a 4 seed. So in hindsight, That Kansas injury and them being untruthful about it probably hurt BYU by two whole seed lines. That got something that was interesting today with that, I think.
I agree. And boy, that's a tough one because, you know, what do you do about it? Clearly, Bill Self was hiding this in order to give his team the benefit of the doubt seeding process.
Not even hiding it. He directly came out and like made an announcement like, hey, we're going to be fully healthy come tournament time.
Lying. We'll call it what it is.
Put it this way. I would have maybe even given him the benefit of the doubt that he wasn't lying if he said, unfortunately, McCullough, we thought he'd be back, but we're going to have to like hold out for next weekend and hope they just shut him down for the entire
tournament.
So clearly, he was nowhere close to playing.
Right,
I'm speculating a little. Maybe something happened and he re-aggravated it. So don't come at me, listeners, if that ends up being the case. But I just really feel like there was some deception going on there, which affected some team seeds in some pretty negative ways.
I don't think you'll find that to be a particularly tough sell on this podcast. There aren't a lot of Michigan State's gone at it with Bill Self and recruiting battles enough over the years that
fair enough.
You will not find sympathy for that program here. So BYU would be the other one. Just to cover a couple of other situations real quick. I believe Gonzaga, the reason Gonzaga got the 5 was directly related to the BYU Sunday thing, correct?
Well, and see, they were the biggest winners of this whole Kansas thing. Had Kansas not lied about those injuries, BYU goes up to a 4. Kentucky probably goes down to Kansas probably goes down to a 5. Now, instead, Gonzaga gets bumped up to a 5 and now gets Kansas, who shouldn't have even been a 4. So they suddenly get the cushiest path to the Sweet 16, where they're going to be favored in both their games, where they should have been a 6 playing a tough 11 and then been an underdog against a 3. So, yeah, it's just a bit of a domino effect there, but Gonzaga got really lucky with Kansas hiding those injuries, BYU ultimately getting shifted because of it, and just lucked into the best draw they could possibly get.
Any feelings? I mentioned the last one seed discussion. So you had most people thought it was an Iowa State North Carolina decision by the time Sunday rolled around, but as it turned out, it was, I guess it was really North Carolina Tennessee. How did you feel about the committee's rationale there? Did they get that right? Or I actually don't remember who you had.
I did have Iowa State 5. I mean, I got it right with North Carolina. I'm not okay. Stunned that it was Tennessee 5 instead. I think you could honestly, I was very confident it'd be North Carolina, and it was. And I thought it was a coin flip between Tennessee and Iowa State for that fifth spot. So I'm not surprised at all Tennessee was 5. But like you alluded to before, I was just surprised Iowa State was 8. If you put them at 6, like, all right, I had 5 and 6 swap. That was a coin flip. Fine. But the fact that they were even below Marquette in Arizona did surprise me a little. But then that was the committee just going back to non-conference strength of schedule, where Iowa State's was horrible and they beat no one in it. So at least they were consistent in that, where if your non-conference strength of schedule is bad and you didn't beat anyone in it, you were getting punished for it, whether it's fair or not.
And again, if we needed one more data point on the notion that the committee doesn't really evaluate what you do in your conference tournaments, that would be it, right? Because Iowa
yes.
State had easily the most impressive game, I would say, of anyone in America by just absolutely hammering Houston in the Big 12 title game, and yet obviously, clearly got absolutely no benefit from that at all.
Absolutely, because, I mean, what that tells me is, all right, well, if they didn't beat Houston, were they going to be a 3? Were they going to be Baylor?
Right.
They just beat in the semifinals? I don't think so. I think they would have been a 2 ahead of them. So clearly that win over Houston either moved them up from 8 to 8, or they would have still had them below Baylor, lost, which would have been kind of shocking to me as well. So either way, it was a weird decision having them down there. Guess it doesn't make too much of a difference since they were 2 regardless, but, and that's something I always wonder as well too, is like, does the committee put more stock into it when it's affecting a seed line? Like, would that game have mattered more for Iowa State if they thought they really had a chance of going up to a 1?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we have seen situations, okay, involving Michigan State. One year I can think about was 2012. Where Michigan State played Ohio State in the Big Ten Tournament Championship. But I believe the way the committee had it is, well, the winner is the 1 seed and the loser is the 2 seed. And that's just how it was done. So there could be those situations, but it wasn't exactly that way because Houston wasn't going to lose a 1 seed no matter what happened, right? Clearly.
Exactly. Yeah, they were going to get a 1 no matter what. So that might have been part of the reason. Sorry, there's some noise going on behind me. I apologize.
just a quick follow-up to that, then. I just want to ask an opinion, since you're locked into this in a way that most of us aren't.
Yeah.
What do you think the rationale is on the committee's part for not really taking conference tournament results so much into account? Because in my mind, I could see it in the sense that, especially in the major conferences, maybe there's not always quite the level of intensity that you see in the one bid leagues for obvious reasons. You know, you're not life and death. But on the other hand, I look at it and I say, well, these are actual games. Why do they not count the same way? Let's put it this way. If Iowa State beats Houston by that much in a game in early February, it probably matters a lot, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it didn't really matter nearly as much now in a game between the same two teams on a neutral court where,
Do you sense that there's any movement to maybe change how these things get evaluated? Do people involved just not care enough?
I don't even
to where they think
they
it matters.
Don't care. I think it's just that the games are, they're already meeting. They're already seeding these teams. They're already going through data as these games are happening. So I think, if anything, they just look at the results of these games like, hey, do we need to move them up a spot or two because of this? instead of completely looking at the resume fresh with that win and seeing just how much it made it better. So if anything, I just think the selection show on Sunday should be the only thing college basketball related happening that day. Now, I know that game's on Saturday, but still, I think if all the games finished on Saturday, that would give the committee time, instead of having to make contingency brackets for Sunday's games, to fully reflect on the results of those Saturday and those Friday games and give them the value that they should have. I just personally would move all conference tournaments that end on Sunday to ending on Saturday. And then I think those games are actually going to have the value that they should. I'm sure for TV money reasons, that's going to happen.
I was just going to say, so where that leads us is, as with almost everything else that doesn't make sense in college sports, it's about television.
Exactly.
In the end.
You need that game to lead into the show, but when you have a game leading into the show, clearly it's not going to affect that selection show.
Right.
They're not going to change the bracket with 5 minutes in between the final buzzer and the start of the selection show.
Yeah, so what you're really saying is the committee's kind of lazy, that they don't want to do the extra work.
I mean, it might not have been, maybe a little, but at the same time, there's just so much going on. Even if they weren't being lazy, just with the timing of these games, they just don't have time
to
fully reflect on it. Now, maybe if they had a couple more energy drinks and stayed up a little bit, they could. I mean, that's...
We can do it all-nighter.
Personally, if I'm on the selection committee, I'll stay up all night and make sure to get it right. But and that's an old elder gentleman on that committee.
Right, yes. They're not young. Yeah, for sure. Should we go through the picks here?
Sure.
The brackets. All right, so let's do that. Again, this is brought to you by the Brothers Who Just Do Gutters. If you have gutter work that you need done, whether on your east side or the west side of the state, make sure you contact the Gutter Brothers because, well, they just do the best job. That's all they do. And they make sure that that water stays away from your foundation, which causes all kinds of problems. They can work on your house, your business. No job is too big or too small from the brothers. 10% off, you mentioned Final Four when you get your estimate. You can find that at our support page at thefinalfoursonthescheduled.com/support. You can also find links to Nudge Printing and the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids as well, which we'll talk about in a little bit. All right. So the first caveat here is that... I don't know. I think I was slightly better than you last time, Dom, but not by much. We were probably bottom 25%. So whatever we say, probably discount. I think Rod was, I think you were better than me. I think you were like a little below 50th percentile. So, you know, so we're just putting that out there right now. So, you know, make sure you enter our challenge. So let's start with the East.
Grain of thought.
Yeah. That's all the disclaimers you need. So the East has number one seed is UConn. Two is Iowa State. The three is Illinois, and the four is Auburn. And so I guess the only thing I'd say here is this is also where my dad's alma mater, Drake, is. They're the seed as a 10 seed. I'll admit, I've hardly seen any of these teams. I personally have Drake going all the way to the Elite Eight because I do like Tucker DeVries. I do think they pose some problems. I don't know. I would say it would be a tough game, but I think if they get to Illinois, I think they can beat Illinois. So anyway, that's sort of my like upset thing. Otherwise, I have UConn going through against the advice of Rod.
Yeah, and I'll say that region, I have UConn coming out just because I can't pick against them. But I'll say this, if Auburn was in any other region, I think I was going to have them in my Final Four. So I really think if anyone's going to knock them out, and that's going to be the team to do it, and that's going to be, it might have been my national championship had Auburn been anywhere else. So I think that's a real team that could knock them out and could potentially go there. And if you're trying to pick up some points and some bracket pulls, then or no one else is going to have something, have Auburn go on a crazy run. Hope they beat UConn, because if they get past them, I think they're going to keep winning. So watch out for them. But I do have UConn. I think it's the safe pick. I'm at least going to pick UConn in like my family pools with a few people, but maybe in ours, where you get the extra points for the upsets, I might go with Auburn. So, yeah.
You read my mind. I've got Auburn taking out UConn in the Sweet 16. I have Iowa State winning the region.
Okay.
I really like the grit that team shows defensively. And when I've seen them, they've looked very, very impressive. The only reason, look, UConn is the one team. I was having this conversation on Selection Sunday with my brother-in-law, who is a big UConn fan. And he asked me if I were picking them, and I said, no, And it's not because I don't think they're a good team. I think they're the closest thing to what we've traditionally thought of as a great team in college basketball. But I just don't believe two things. One, I think we are in an era of parity. There's just no debating that. And the other thing is, you think about it, how frequently does the number one overall seed get through? Not
like
all that often.
Last 10 years, yeah.
Right. Not all that often. So, and I'm with you. I think Auburn's good enough to actually take them out, which is why I picked them. So I had, just as a real quick run through in the bracket, I had a Sweet 16 of BYU. I had BYU beating Illinois in a second round game. BYU against Iowa State, UConn against Auburn, Auburn against Iowa State in the Elite Eight, and Iowa State winning it.
Okay, let's move on to the next bracket. And I got to get pulled up here. Let's go to the South then. This is the Houston Regional. Houston's a one. We've got Marquette as a two. And let's see, Duke is a four and Kentucky's a three. And here I actually have Kentucky coming out of the region. I don't think too crazy here. I just don't trust Houston. Teams that are like very defensively focused, I just don't trust those teams entirely. I feel like you have to score at some point too. But, you know, who knows? And our friend Greg Campy from Oakland is here, but I just don't think they have enough to beat Kentucky, who I think is playing pretty well right now. Yet, of course, they lost in the SEC tournament.
Sorry, moving real quick. It was getting loud where I was. There was some other coaching coming back from a...
We appreciate you just coming in when you're coaching there. So that, and just as a reminder too, with our bracket, not only do we have an upset bonus, but you get a bonus for the seeding. So if a five seed wins, for instance, you get an extra, you get 5 points to every pick and every round. So it's worth more on the first round. So it's going to be totally bizarre scoring. I have no idea how it's going to work out, but I think this way we'll prevent any possibility of having a tie unless we have like 1,000 entries.
What I love the scoring of this format too, because I always find myself just picking so much chalk and it's so boring, but I was just like, oh, but yeah, it's the most likely thing to happen. Now, if there's an upset, I think that could happen, I'm probably going to take it. Cause hey, if it does, you get those extra bonus points for it now. So,
so who do you have, Rod?
I'll go first while you're resituating yourself
then
in this
region. Knock myself to a new spot.
I also have Kentucky going through. I have them beating Houston. I don't feel great about that because, well, one, I think Kentucky's had a lot of problems in recent years getting through the tournament, and I really don't like that defense. But again, I'm just in this no one seeds kind of mindset. And I actually really like Houston. They remind me a lot of vintage Izzo teams in a lot of ways. But I'm picking Kentucky to beat them. My Sweet 16, I had Kentucky over Marquette and Houston over James Madison. So I have, in the first round, I have James Madison a 12 over Wisconsin a 5 and Vermont the 13 over Duke the 4, setting up a second round James Madison-Vermont battle. And I have James Madison winning that one. So they're my pick to rack up some points based on the upset theory that we were just talking about, the way you get more points by virtue of a low seed winning. And I'll admit some of that is bias from having seen them handle Michigan State at Breslin in the season opener. But I actually do think they are a legitimately good team. And despite Wisconsin's run of the Big Ten tournament, I am not sold on where the Badgers are right now.
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that. I think, again, like you said, in a format where you're getting extra points for an upset, even though I'd maybe give Wisconsin the slight edge, the fact that I'm calling it a slight edge in a 5-12 matchup just shows how much value there is there with James Madison. I'd say a 60% chance Wisconsin wins. But yeah, when there's a 40% chance with a 12 seed, take them, especially if you're getting extra points. This should be a close down to the wire battle, regardless, I think. And then,
so
yeah.
So, who do you have winning the region?
So, I mean, here's the only thing. I'm not sold on any of the other teams. Houston scares me because they don't have much depth at this point in the year. But I Marquette with Kolek, I don't know if he's going to be fully healthy. Kentucky just seems too up and down. If they do come out, I would not be surprised at all. But also, I just don't know if they're consistent enough to do it over four straight games. They seem to put up a stinker one out of every four games somewhere. So maybe Duke could do it, but I don't know. It's in the two big games against North Carolina where I was like, all right, show me you're for real and you can do it against another team. They couldn't even do it in the home one. So I'm almost taking Houston out of default here. Again, maybe when I'm getting more points for like a lower seed, I might talk myself into something crazy. Like, honestly, I think Florida could go on a little bit of a run here. I don't know if I'll go as insane as...
But that's another team with an injury problem, though. They lost their center, I believe.
Exactly.
Right?
They did lose Handlogden, and if they didn't lose him, I might have actually had the guts to take Florida to the Final Four because I really like this Florida team, but they lose him and then just don't even look competitive against Auburn the rest of the game.
Right.
That really worries me, or else I would have loved them as a 7 seed, as the low seed that goes on a run. But, yeah, the fact that even my low seed that I could have talked myself into as an injury concern, too, I'm just almost going back to Houston out of default here, but I really don't like it. I just think they got a pretty good draw. Now, if Kentucky can be consistent enough to make it to them, they could beat them, but I do think Houston will get to the Elite Eight, and if they play anyone other than Kentucky, I'm not even worried about them losing that game either.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the Midwest. This is the Purdue bracket. With Purdue as a 1 seed, you have Tennessee as a 2, Creighton as a 3, and Kansas as the 4, which we've talked plenty about Kansas. I don't think probably any of us think Kansas is going to do much of anything in this tournament at this point. I actually had, for my Final Four, I just had Purdue and McNeese, and then I think I had Creighton and Tennessee. So I generally went chalk. It's probably safe to say also Colorado State's going to advance now since Virginia's down almost 20 points as we're recording this, which is equivalent to about 40-point deficit for Virginia. So I think that's they're finished. I have Purdue coming out of this virtue. I think this is Matt Painter's year. As much as I despise it, I think it's going to be him. This is the thing. I think going to be my more pessimistic bracket. It's just kind of how it started filling out. The teams I really don't think are good, I don't like very much. I have them advancing. I don't know. Maybe it's just because of Michigan State's year. So anyway, so that's as much deep analysis as you get from me.
Yeah, and then so for me going out of this region, honestly, I think I'm going to go with Tennessee. Again, I think Purdue's probably the best team in this region, but I can't trust them in March until I see it. And lucky is enough, these two teams already played earlier in the year, Purdue and Tennessee, and that was a really close game on a neutral court. And I think Connect has gotten a lot better from that point on to how he's been playing down the stretch to where he was in that point of the season. So they only lost by 4. Has he gotten them 4 points better at this point of the year? I think so. So I just like Tennessee in that matchup because I think it'll be a toss-up, and I think Connect might just make the difference. But wouldn't surprise me either way. But again, if I'm a toss-up between a 1 and a 2 seed, give me the 2 seed. And then as far as upsets in this region, I'm looking at Oregon, and I think not only are they going to beat South Carolina, they can give Creighton a real test as well. I'm locking them in over South Carolina in that 6-11 upset, and I'm somewhat considering taking them to the Sweet 16. I think Oregon's got a bit of a run in them. And yeah, Kansas, had they been healthy, I would have loved them in this region as a 4, but clearly they're not, so I'm taking Gonzaga over them, and they're not even making the Sweet 16.
Okay. I am with you on the Oregon-South Carolina thing.
And you're taking Purdue, right? Purdue the whole way. Right?
I've got Purdue actually beating the 16 this year, but I am taking them to lose their next game against TCU. And it's nothing even particular about TCU and the matchup. It's just because, Dom, for your benefit, we obviously talk a lot about Purdue as a fellow Big Ten team, and I'm still extremely skeptical of their guards, particularly if they have to get in a matchup with somebody who can apply consistent ball pressure. I think that's a real flaw that's shown up in a lot of their losses over the last 2 years. I'm not sure that TCU does that, but I just have no faith in Purdue overall. I think they go out. Where I go completely off the board is I've got Will Wade making a strong-ass performance, to quote himself, paraphrase himself, and getting all the way to the Elite Eight, beating Gonzaga. Ooh. I have Samford beating Kansas because I think Samford is built to give Kansas real problems considering they're down McCullough. I have McNeese beating Samford in that Battle of the Titans, that 12-13 game. And then I have McNeese going against TCU and coming out. Finally, the McNeese train ends against Tennessee in the Elite Eight. So I do have Tennessee joining you with my pick to come out of the region. But the other half of the bracket, I'm going way off the board. I don't have faith. Kansas down a guy, and even when they had him, I didn't think this was a vintage Kansas team by any stretch. Gonzaga is probably their worst team in more than a decade, in my view. And I think McNeese, I actually saw McNeese beat the hell out of the University of Michigan in December, which doesn't mean very much now. But at the time, I was really, really impressed by that team. And I think, if anything, they may be a little bit undervalued by people. I mean, to see them as a 12, that's a sign of respect for a school of their stature. That's not a terrible seed. But I really do legitimately think they're good enough to make that kind of run. So we'll see what happens.
That would not surprise me at all. I mean, I think if they played in a power conference or even like a good mid-major like the A-10 or the Mountain West, this would be a team that could have gotten an at-large for sure, and maybe like a 7 or an 8 seed. I mean, they are that good. It's just about the best they could have gotten with their schedule. But I really like McNeese. Wouldn't stun me at all if they beat Gonzaga. And I agree, if they beat Gonzaga, I think they'd probably beat Kansas or Samford as well. And who knows with who comes that one at this point. So, yeah, even though I'm taking Gonzaga there, I'm not confident they beat McNeese. And if McNeese does beat them, I would not be stunned by a deep run by them at all. So I like that pick.
Okay, so we'll move to the final region. Before we do, if you're having trouble seeing clearly, maybe you just need your windows cleaned, contact the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. they can take care of whatever kind of windows you got. If you got just one's your house, maybe your business, a high rise. They even clean the state capitol. I mean, they do it all. So you can get a hold of them at their support page, thefinalfoursonthischedule.com/support. There you can get an estimate. They'll come out and they'll take a look at your house. They can do any sort of job. Again, inside, outside windows, windowsills, super meticulous. They can even power wash your house too if it's a little bit muddy from the long Michigan wet winter we've been having. So check them out. You won't regret it. And then let's go to the West region, which is the one most interesting to Michigan State fans. That's the North Carolina region, which North Carolina is a 1, Arizona is a 2, Baylor the 3, and Alabama is the 4. I'll just start with Michigan State. I have them beating Mississippi State, and I feel strangely confident about this game. I just think this is going to be a game that Michigan State, with especially with the ability to get some turnovers, is going to be able to score a lot in transition and kind of take care of Mississippi State pretty easily. It just depends which Michigan State team shows up. And then I have North Carolina, them falling to North Carolina in the second round. I think it's just going to be a little too much for Michigan State with the inside. But I think I had Arizona coming out of this region, taking out Baylor. And then I had Nevada winning. I had quite a few. I had Grand Canyon beating St. Mary's and then falling to Alabama. And I think I had Alabama beating North Carolina. So anyways, it was Alabama, Arizona, with Arizona coming out.
Yeah, and I'll say in this region, I mean, if you're a Michigan State fan, which I think most people listening are, I don't think you could have gotten in a better region. I mean, when I was filling out the bracket and I looked at this region, I was like, gross, I don't want to pick any of these teams to go to the final.
Yep.
I mean, you look to the East where you have Connecticut, Illinois, Iowa State, Auburn. I would take all four of those teams to win this region over any of the teams in it. Now, that's not saying that I think Michigan State will go all the way to the Final Four, but if they have a chance, this was the best spot they could have been put in. I mean, I think North Carolina is by far the worst one seed. Alabama can't play defense at all. Baylor is, I mean, you guys already crushed Baylor earlier this year. I'm taking Arizona to come out. I do think just being in the West and kind of having that fan advantage, and just the fact that the only reason they're down to a 2 is because they played down to bad opponents this year that they probably could have crushed. I do think Arizona's a pretty good team, and I think they're going to come out of here. But would it surprise me if it was Arizona over Michigan State in the Elite Eight? I'm not saying that because I'm on this podcast. I've been saying that to other people as well. I I really think this sets up for a potential Michigan State run. I could also see them lose to Mississippi State because, like you said, which one shows up. But, I might even have them over North Carolina in my bracket since I'm taking Arizona to win this region regardless. And then you look at some upsets. I think this region is chocked full of low seeds that can go on some runs too. Just chaos everywhere. I mean, obviously Michigan State is a 9, but I mean, I think Nevada is going to beat Dayton 10 over 7. I'm picking New Mexico over Clemson 11 over 6. And I'm taking Grand Canyon over St. Mary's 12 over 5. So I'm going with the 9, 10, 11, and 12 in this region. It's going to be upsets galore. Maybe some of those teams could even win a second one, but I do think when it's all said and done, Arizona, with that kind of being in the West advantage as well, is going to come out of it.
And I think before you go, Rod, I think that a one seed has lost to an 8-9 every year for the last, I can't remember how long. So it's, you know, one of these 8-9s is going to lose, or it's going to beat the one seed. So, I mean, I guess it could be Michigan State, even though it's in North Carolina's backyard.
It's the most likely one out of all the four, if I had to say.
I'm with Dom on two of those three first-round upsets. I have New Mexico over Clemson. I have Grand Canyon over St. Mary's. I do actually have Dayton going on a little run. I have Dayton beating Nevada and Dayton beating Arizona.
Wow.
I'm with you on the, let's say, mediocrity of this region. It was very hard for me to pick a winner. Because I agree completely. It's like, I don't love anybody here. Just get to the heart of it for our listeners. I also have, I'm with Eric on this. I have Michigan State beating Mississippi State. And then I have them losing that second round game to North Carolina. And honestly, what tilts it for me, I do think Michigan State will be in this one, mostly because it's one of the things that helped them with all the things we've been talking about tonight. They didn't get blown out in games this
year.
Yeah,
good defense.
When they lost, they lost competitive games, and many of the games, at least, that they won big, which I think really is part of what fueled them in the predictive metrics.
I was about to make that point. You were spot on.
Yeah. The main reason I find it, as much as I want to pick Michigan State to win that second round game, I can't because of the history. Michigan State is 0-5 against Carolina in NCAA tournament games. Two of them have come in the Final Four, one of them in a national title game. I'm sorry, three of them have come in a Final Four. I forgot about 57. So three of the five have been in Final Fours, one in a national title game, and then there were two. They lost a round of 32 game when Drew Neitzel was playing in the 07 season. And then there was a Sweet 16 loss in 1998 against Carolina. So because of that track record, I just can't find it in myself to pull the trigger. I do have North Carolina getting to the Elite Eight, and I've got Baylor there. And as you said, Michigan State waxed them in December. I am not a believer in Baylor, but I've got Baylor winning it because I'm sticking to my no one seeds theory. No other good reason than that. I don't think Baylor's a great team, but I don't think this is a great region. So somebody's got to win it. I'm going to go with Baylor.
And that's got to give you a confidence as a Michigan State fan. If you think that the team that axed can get out, then why can't you get out as well? I mean, it's possible. Yeah.
I think there's a chance Michigan State goes on a run. I'm not saying I don't believe there's any shot. It's just, as I say, when I get
that
through all the analysis,
North Carolina's tough. Yeah.
But you know what? They had a similar streak against Duke up until 2019. So streaks are made to be broken, and maybe this will be the year that we see it broken. But until I see it, I have a hard time pulling the trigger when I'm trying to play for something and not going with my heart.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time Michigan State won four games in a row. I guess it's probably back in January. It's hard to imagine winning
that's
six
a,
in a row.
That's a,
you know?
Good, that's a good point. But the flip side is you could say they're overdue for it. So we'll see.
However you want to talk yourself into it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll probably close it up there. Make sure, again, you check out the contest. You go to thefinalforce.schedule.com/contest to get access to our bracket. You still have a couple days to do that. If, you know, if you're waiting to find out what happened to Virginia, Colorado State, you'll have a slight edge. If you want to make them go to the Final Four, so you know who to pick. I always feel like one of those teams, usually they're 11 seeds, but one of those tends to make a run to the Sweet 16.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it's just because you get that extra game, you sort of get your juices going and you take out a team, but those are taking out threes. And
We've seen a couple of them go to Final Fours. BC,
yeah,
you did
UCLA,
it.
UCLA, yeah.
And UCLA not too long ago.
Right, yeah. And all right.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, with Colorado State, I mean, you look in that region, big part of the reason they made the field was out of conference. Who did they crush? But Creighton, who's in that same region of the bracket. Yeah. And they get hot and match up with them again in the Sweet 16. It could set up for them going on a pretty deep run, especially because the two teams they would have to beat to get there, two of the more inconsistent teams in the country. Texas and Tennessee are both Jekyll and Hyde. If you get Hyde both games and then get a rematch versus Creighton, who they clearly match up great against, maybe it's Colorado State making that run from the first four this year.
Could be.
This is just the more further evidence that you can't mess with this tournament and make it all high major teams, because it'd be really just boring
exactly.
To watch, right, Providence or whatever, Minnesota. All right. So, again, if you want to check out the support page, you can go to the finalforce.schedule.com/support. There you can get access to all our great sponsors, the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids, the Brothers of Just Two Gutters, and Nudge Printing, who's providing all the gifts and all the prizes for our bracket challenge. Again, if Gabe wins, now last year he was, I think dead last is probably does not describe how badly his bracket was. So I'm not too worried about us having trying to get find a prize for Gabe. But if that were to happen, we'll figure something out. But so check out Nudge Printing. And then finally, there's a ways if you want to support the show financially, keep us on the air. You can do a one-time or recurring gift through that support page. So thanks again to Dom coming after his basketball game. Do you guys win your game, by the way?
So actually, as much as I'm into basketball, ironically enough, I just finished coaching a soccer game.
Oh, soccer game. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think it's good to have a little bit of balance. I already devote so much time to basketball. Get another sport to give me a break once in a while. But we did.
Yeah,
win.
For sure.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's. I actually went to my very first when I was in Minneapolis for the Big Ten tournament. That Saturday night, we went to a soccer game, which I think is where I picked up this cold. We went to, it was the MLS game in Minneapolis, and it started snowing during the game for about 5 minutes, and they scored a goal. They scored a goal during the snowstorm. I remembered again why I'm just not a big soccer fan. My son likes it a lot. I know Rod watches a lot of it too, and he enjoys it, but you know, I feel like you're only using half your body. So anyway, anyway,
fair enough.
All right. So until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go green.
Go green.
You're supposed to say go white. That's how it works in Spartan.
Oh, sorry.
What are you from Texas or something?
Double down on green. Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dom.
Thanks a lot. It was great.
Rich Shannon, fun as always.